The English Civil Wars, 1639 to 1660. The Battle of Camp Hill. Now, in April of 1643, it's a pretty busy month because during the month of April, you have 12 major military events, including sieges and what have you, but you also have four named battles. Although in the case of one of them that we'll find out later on, not today, but later on, one of them, they can't seem to find the location. The Battle of Camp Hill is going to be a little bit different. They are going to actually find it. Now, during the first campaign of the war, there's a little background here to this battle. While marching from Shrewsbury to engage parliamentary forces at the Battle of Edge Hill on October the 17th in 1642, King Charles passed through Birmingham. Well, the townsfolk seized some of his carriages containing the royal plate and furniture, which they conveyed for security to Warwick Castle, a parliamentary stronghold. During the first year of the war, the inhabitants of Birmingham apprehended all messengers and suspected persons, frequently attacked and reduced small parties of royalists whom they sent to prison to the fortified city of Coventry, which is the origin of the expression, "Send him to Coventry." Now, historian John Willis Bund said that one of the characteristics of King Charles were small acts of vengeance, which he indulged. And so among the orders given to Prince Rupert for his Lichfield expedition was that he should teach Birmingham a lesson for their disloyalty, especially for the insults that they had put on the king in October of 1642 when they plundered his royal coach. And then, of course, Rupert's mission ends up being threefold. First of all, punish the people of Birmingham. Second, punish the garrison at Lichfield, or put a garrison in Lichfield. And third, clear the country as far as possible. Now, to do this, he was given 1,200 cavalry and dragoons and anywhere from 200 to 600 foot soldiers. So on Wednesday, March the 29th, 1643, Rupert left Oxford, reaching Chipping Norton that evening. On Thursday, he was at Shipton-on-Stour. Friday, March the 31st, which is Good Friday. I'm sure the parliamentarians didn't appreciate that. He was at Stratford-on-Avon. And on Saturday, April the 1st, Easter Eve, he was at Henley in Arden. There he spent Easter Sunday. And on Easter Monday, which is April the 3rd, set out for Birmingham to execute the first part of his task. The Battle of Camp Hill is also called the Battle of Birmingham. It takes place in and around Camp Hill. And in the skirmish, a company of parliamentarians from the Lichfield garrison, with the support of some local townsmen, approximately 300, tried to stop Rupert's detachment. They put up an incredibly stout resistance, and according to the royalists, shot at them from houses as small parliamentarian force was driven out of town and back towards Lichfield. And in order to suppress that fire, the royalists torched the houses where the shooting came from. Well, of course, after the battle, they're going to loot, pillage, and burn the whole place. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon on April the 3rd that Rupert, to his surprise, on arriving, found the, quote, sturdy sons of freedom, as the local historians Hutton and Guest called them, determined to fight them. Now, this determination was opposed to the opinion of the parliamentarians, not only of military, but also of civilians, the ministers of Birmingham and the leading men of town. But the middle and inferior sort of people, especially those who had weapons, insisted on resisting. So at last, the whole group decided to fight. Finding such was their case, Rupert gave the order to attack their defenses immediately. Their defenses were only a bank of earth, behind which a handful of musketeers was placed. As the royalists advanced, they received such heavy fire that on reaching the works, they could not stand up against it and were forced to retreat. So a second attempt was made, and it was repulsed as well. Now things are getting serious. It would never do for Rupert to be defeated by the inhabitants of Birmingham, yet there was little chance of carrying the works by a direct attack. Well, some of Rupert's men saw that it would be possible to go around the fields, ride around and get to the rear of the works, and from there they could charge the parliamentarian rear. This was tried and was found successful. The defenders of the works could not stand being attacked from the front and the rear, so they abandoned the works and fled into the town. Rupert's troopers followed them. As I mentioned before, from the houses, fire was kept on the royalist troops as they advanced up the street. On this, the troopers then set fire to the houses from which they thought they were being fired on. And pretty soon, the whole town was ablaze in multiple places. Pushing on, the resistance became less, and those who had fought simply scattered. But the fight was not over. Captain Richard Greaves, commander of the Parliamentarians, if you want to call it an army, rallied his troops of cavalry, drawing them up at the further end of Lichfield, wheeled them around, and charged the scattered royalists. Well, the royalists weren't expecting any more resistance, and so they gave way. Royalist commander Lord Denby, who was leading them, was severely wounded, knocked from his horse, and left for dead, and died shortly after from his wounds. His men then fled helter-skelter until they came to their own colors. There they formed up in the rear of the royalist lines. Captain Greaves had carried out his objective. His charge did give his infantry time to get away and prevented them from being pursued, so he didn't press any further. He had himself, in his charge, received no less than 5 wounds. Reforming his men, he faced about and drew off towards Lichfield. He had saved his soldiers, but left the unfortunate townspeople to the mercies of Rupert's troopers. Irritated by the resistance, especially the cavalry charge, Rupert's men were not inclined to be merciful. They rode around the town, leaping the hedges and ditches to catch the townsmen. Those they caught, they killed. If the lists are to be trusted, tradesmen, laborers, and women were all cut down indiscriminately. There are two cases, a little different. Some of the troopers, riding to an inn, the man who takes care of the horses came out to do his job, and they just killed him right on the spot. And then there was a minister, and the minister was killed in the street. Now, parliamentary supporters said he was mistaken for the minister of Birmingham, who was a vocal supporter of the parliamentary cause and was therefore murdered. The royalists said that the king was perjured, calling him the papistal king, and he would rather die than live under such a king. And on hearing this, the enraged troopers obliged him by cutting him down. Parliamentary supporters alleged he had been a lunatic, held Jewish opinions, and had been in Bedlam and other prisons. Some said for 16, others said for 22 years, and he had only recently been released. On him were found a number of idle and foolish papers, which the Parliament said proved him mad. The Royalists said it proved him immoral. Like some of the other foolish people, he kept a diary and entered in it a number of matters that might have been better off left out. For example, a comfortable kiss from Mrs. E. with some moistness, a cinnamon kiss from a noted woman, a kiss from a girl of 14 years of age. Historian John Willis Bunn states that nothing could show better the feelings of both parties, and it may or not have been in accordance with the laws of war to have cut down a preacher making disloyal speeches, but to kill in cold blood a man who had in his pocket a journal of doubtful entries was a disgrace even in those wild times. Well, from an aftermath standpoint, you know, Rupert's men lose about 30, the parliamentarians lost 15 to 20, and then you have all these civilians which were not tabulated. Rupert didn't stay very long in Birmingham on Easter Tuesday, April the 4th. He left there and headed to Wassel, and on Wednesday he reached Connacht. And there he halted until Saturday, April the 8th, when he marched on Lichfield and laid siege to the town. Now, if you want to visit it today, good luck. Urban development has claimed the site, and there is no physical trace of the battle that remains to this day. Even Prince Rupert's headquarters on the afternoon of the battle, known as the Old Ship Public House from local tradition, only made it into the 19th century, but it was preserved by photographs, and it no longer exists either. So this is another one of these small-scale battles. But if you're on the business end of being looted, pillaged, and burned, and having civilians murdered, it's not a positive thing for you. Now, next time, we'll be looking at a couple of different battles. Head on in the April, we'll look at the Battle of Ancaster Heath, and we'll also look at the Battle of Ripple Field. Now, the sources for this, History of England by Thornton, Lockyer, and Smith, Cavaliers versus Roundheads, The English Civil War, 1642-1649 by Hibbert, English Civil War, 1640-1660 by Warden. The English Civil War, 1642-1651 by Gaunt. And the English Civil War's Atlas, Concise History of the Wars of the Three Kingdoms, 1639-51 by Lipscomb. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment. Check out the merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.